It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. What a great show we have for you. A special treat. One of my really good friends, and when you make a friend in radio, then you've done something special. And this guy is means the world to me. The Golden Pipes of David Horn. Who is David Horn? Well, he is the engineer and producer for the Pirate IMG Sports Network for East Carolina University. He works with Jeff Charles and Marty Fuhrer and Kevin Monroe on the East Carolina football games. And, of course, Cy Seymour for the basketball games with Jeff Charles. But we're going to talk to him about his job and behind the scenes, plus honoring a great man, the late, great Woody Durham, the legendary voice of the Tar Heels of UNC. And let's go to that interview right now.
You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and right now we have a very special treat, and we have with us now David Horn, who is with the Pirate IMG Sports Radio Network. And David, thank you so much for coming on with us. It's a huge honor to have you on.
Oh, Dave, absolutely. I've been listening to some of the material you've been producing and putting out there. This is a great venture and a lot of good stuff you've already got going. So congratulations to you, and it's an honor for me to join you on the line here.
Yeah, you know, we were just talking right before we started. People may not know, but the reason why I started the podcast is I've always wanted to do a sports show, and I don't think anybody would hire me, so I decided to go.
Well, you know, these days it's great that someone who has the talent and ability that you do can go out there and just do your own thing. You don't have to worry about getting a corporate entity to say, okay, come on and do it. You just go out there and do it, and you're doing some good stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I'm trying very hard. You know, it's kind of like anything else. If you knew how hard it was before you did it, you probably wouldn't do it. But
right.
but now that we're in it, we're going to continue to go on. You know, the great thing about the podcasting is we get a chance to talk to people we want to talk to, and you don't have to worry about a general manager, owner, a program director, or people saying you can't do that because if you talk to David Horn, then they're the competition and all that kind of stuff. So we just stick to doing what we think is best, and obviously we try to keep it family oriented and try to keep it more like radio as far as a show. But then the great thing is we have more of a distribution where we can send it out to anywhere you can hear a podcast. So we're trying to do that. We wanted to have you on. First off, before I forget, we're going to talk to David about his role as engineer for the Pirates and IMG, and appreciate those great folks and for the games, and get a little bit of a behind-the-scenes thing there and some other stuff plus. But before I want to get started, I want to honor a great man who I thought the world of and had a chance to have on my show probably four or five times when I was in Rocky Mount. That's Woody Durham. They're having the memorial this weekend on Sunday. Is it Carmichael, David, they're having it?
That's correct. Carmichael Arena, I think they call it now. But, yeah, Carmichael. Everybody just refers to it as Carmichael. A lot of legendary games and a legendary calls for Woody in that arena, that's for sure. And so, yeah, Sunday, April the 8th, there's a public memorial, and my wife and I are going. Woody, I spent a lot of time working right alongside him on the Tar Heel Sports Network and at WCHL in Chapel Hill. And everybody has some great Woody stories. I've got a few, I think back on the impact he had on my career early on. And really in retrospect, it was more significant than I realized it was at the time. I was right out of college working at WCHL, and I was given this massive assignment to produce coverage of the U.S. Olympic Festival in 1987 that was coming to the Triad and the Triangle. There's 29 venues spread out between the two metros, and WCHL wanted to produce the very best coverage anybody, radio, TV, newspaper, anybody. And somehow they called on me to put that all together and make it happen. But I said, okay, well, who do I have to work with? And they said, well, as many reporters as you need out in the field, and Woody Durham. I said, sign me up. And I remember the first thing that after we met a couple of times to decide the strategy, what we were going to do and how we were going to make it happen, I remember him saying to me, you know, just let me know what you need and when you need me. And, you know, I don't think he meant like call him at 11 o'clock at night or anything like that. But I look back on it now, and I think the way Woody is, He's such a perfectionist and detail person. He was preparation. You couldn't out prepare Woody. So when he said that to me, I look back on it now, and I think that was like, you know, I trust you. Go out and get it done. And you know, throughout my career, I've tried to keep that bar high like Woody. Nobody can keep it as high as Woody ever did. But I look back on that, and I managed to earn his trust and maintain it throughout all the time that I worked with him around WCHL, and then on the Tar Heel Sports Network as well. So Woody means a whole lot to me and his family. Wes was actually one of the field reporters. He was still a student at Elon at the time.
Yeah.
And so we recruited him in to cover the ice venues there at Coliseum in Greensboro. So my wife and I will go. We'll spend some time with his family there and hear probably a number of dignitaries associated with Carolina make some wonderful comments and remember Woody in a great way. So we're looking forward to that. And Woody did mean so much to everybody across North Carolina and across the country.
That's right. He was not only a North Carolina, when I say North Carolina, I'm talking about the state of North Carolina icon, but nationally certainly meant a lot to the university. And I can think back many, many times, David, growing up, you and I are close in age. But back then, there wasn't a lot of games on television. And so what happened was I got used to it. I still listen to a lot of different broadcasts on the radio because not only am I a radio guy, but what happened was I love sports so much, and the only way that I could know what was going on was because of the radio. And thank God for Woody Durham and Wally Ausley and Bob Harris. There's a lot of great guys that. And the thing about Woody, I remember very well. When you were talking about preparation, one thing I can say to that is that Woody knew everything about the family of that player. It seemed like you could say the mother was a three-time, you know, star athlete in high school, and the dad is a lawyer, or he's this, and he knew so much, and that to me taught a lot to me as a kid about what was expected of a voice of whatever particular school or even broadcasting period. You know, when you are doing a show, a podcast, this particular thing is like an hour long, but we do hours and hours and hours of preparation, and it starts all the way back to Woody and all the great announcers that I didn't know how hard it was to do a broadcast, and because of him, he made it look so easy and sound so easy.
Oh, he did. The facts and details that he would convey to paint the picture, what you ended up hearing was a fraction of what he actually could have used. You know, he had so many details because for every scenario, if a certain thing might happen in the game, then he would pull this particular detail out because it was so relatable to that. But, you know, if it never happened, he would never use it, but he always had it there. And, you know, you talk about how well-respected he was, not only across the state, but nationally. I was doing the Final Four down in San Antonio back in 1998. And we were set up and, you know, pretty much ready to go a number of hours before the game. And I'm walking down the corridor, and here's Jim Nantz walking down. I think he's not going. I'm just going to give him, the courtesy nod and keep on going. He actually stopped me and said, "Hey, how are you? Jim Nantz?" David Horney said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm the engineer and producer for the Tar Heel Sports Network." "Oh, you work with Woody." And then we stood there and talked for 5 minutes about Woody. So, not only says great things about Woody, but it, you know, shocked me that someone of Jim Nantz's stature would stand there and talk to somebody like me for 5 minutes. But anyway, that's the way Woody was. He was the man, and he was the standard by which all others were judged, I think.
He definitely was. It's hard to believe that, unfortunately, we lost him, but I know that he had been suffering from an illness the last few years, and certainly we're going to try to get Wes Durham on, and my thoughts and prayers go out with the family. I'm still kind of, it's hard to believe. He's one of those guys that announcers and broadcasters are like one of your heroes, and when they're no longer with us, then it kind of gives you a little bit of a void, but then I was thinking about before I came on with you that we're very blessed to have had Woody around as long as we did, and same thing with Bob Harris. There's a lot of people that we've had along, and of course a guy you work with, we're going to talk about in just a minute, Jeff Charles, who's a huge, I'm a huge fan of before I met him, and we're friends now. But you look up to these guys as something you've always wanted to do. I'm talking about myself. And then when you get a chance to meet him, and the case with Woody, he was so good. He could have been so arrogant, but it was not the case. He was so down to earth and humble. And it was very refreshing when I was talking to him. He treated me with such respect, and a guy that had a lot less experience. That was 10 years ago almost, so maybe a decade of experience at the time. And he treated me as if I'd had 50 years of experience.
Yeah, that's the way he was. And he liked to help if you wanted the help and the guidance. And as long as you maintained his respect and didn't do anything really, really bad to cause a problem with the broadcast over and over again. You know, making a mistake wasn't a problem, but just don't make the same one twice, you know. And that was one of the other things he taught me. I mean, we're all human. Yeah, you know, we're going to make mistakes. But learning from the things you do and doing it this way or that way, I mean, he was really good at helping me in a lot of ways in that regard. You know, I wasn't an aspiring play-by-play guy. I was a radio guy who produced content and knew the technical side and the programming side. And so I wasn't aspiring to be a sports play-by-play guy. But that didn't matter. It was his continuing effort to keep the bar high. I mean, I've said that probably the third time now, but that is the best way to describe it. Working with Woody just made you want to be better. It's about the best way I can sum it up.
Did you feel pressure when you worked for a legend like Woody Durham? I mean, do you get a little tight saying, oh my God, I don't make a mistake? That's where I would be like with Woody. I love him so much that I would be like, it's almost like working with family.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about it. When I was engineering the network there, I mean, you're responsible for keeping him on the air and making him, you know, the actual quality of the broadcast as good as it can be. And if you mess up and it impacts the quality of the broadcast that Woody Durham is, you know, there doing, I mean, it's a pretty awesome responsibility. I mean, it's not life or death, but when you think about it, I mean, I've heard stories of people just being in awe of sitting down and putting on the same headset that Woody Durham was using. And I'm sitting there putting him on the air, you know, across the land. So
no pressure.
No pressure. Because if I fail, then, you know, nobody's going to hear Woody. Although, you know, we have backups and backups for the backups. So usually if there's one failure, we have a plan B and a plan C. And we can talk about that more when we get into the next part of it. But, I mean, the other thing I would say along these lines is, you know, you have a lot of the great, talented young broadcasters who are going into the play-by-play business. But as you alluded to, the radio landscape, the media landscape has changed. There's so many different ways to follow any sporting event these days. And back in the day, I mean, radio was pretty much it. And even when TV was coming along with somebody like Woody, you preferred to listen to Woody over the guys on the TV. So I think as time continues to go on, you talk about Bob Harris, Woody Durham, Jeff Charles, the days of the long time tenured, really seasoned, legendary play-by-play guys, I think, as the ones that we are calling that in present day retire and no longer do it, I think you're not going to have that anymore. I just don't think you are, because unfortunately, you know, being a radio play-by-play guy these days is kind of a stepping stone to be on TV, to be frankly honest with you. And so that leaves you without the ability to really establish a legendary radio play-by-play guy at the level of Woody or even close to Woody.
I'll tell you what, he's going to be missed, and I could talk hours and hours about Woody. But again, I want to give my best to Wes and his wife, Jean, everybody there in the family. I know that I didn't really know him personally, but professionally, he was good to me. Like I said, I think it was about four or five times. He came on my show to talk about Duke, North Carolina, that huge robbery. And he was just what a gem. And he's going to be sorely missed. But, again, I feel blessed and feel honored that I get a chance to just listen to him growing up and having a chance to work with him as well. It made me feel good to know when I'll end it like this, David. It made me feel good to know that one of my heroes, looking up, that he was actually a really good guy personally too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He's missed in so many ways, and we'll look forward to honoring him and remembering him on Sunday, this coming Sunday, which is April 8th. And I'm sure there'll be a packed house in Carmichael Arena in Chapel Hill for that.
I wanted to ask you about moving to next up. I know you're an engineer, and you have the folks that don't know David. I've known David now for, I realized I met you as the fall of, I think it was October of 93 when I met you. I came
right
to the station and brought a guest there, and you had back there when you were working for Henry Hinton. By the way, we had him on episode 5. If you don't know who that is, you can listen to that episode and find out. But over there, the studio and Landmark, it's right near Greenville Boulevard and the Walmart, if you know where that is. And there was a studio over there, and I brought over there, and I was just amazed about how good you were. And you treated the guests that I brought over very nice and great. And so it was just one of those things. And then lo and behold, it's funny, you better be careful who you meet and how you treat them, because next thing you know, especially in radio, you're going to be working with them.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, paths cross multiple times sometimes in the radio business. Yeah, that's a long time ago. Those were the good old days for sure.
That's right. I wanted to bring you on. One of the things too is to talk about the broadcast. We were talking about radio and you being an engineer. For those that don't know, if you listen to the Pirate Radio, Pirate Sports cast with Jeff Charles, then you know that there's got to be people behind the scenes, and David does an excellent job. I wanted to get, first of all, before we tell stories, can you give us an idea what it's like? I want to know this myself. What is it like, a typical day, broadcast day for you when setting up? And I know there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, so I wanted to get a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like for a broadcast with Jeff Charles.
Yeah, well, when we're on the road, you know, when we're doing home games, I'll usually go and do a setup and a run-through and a check of everything earlier in the week, and then go back in on game day several hours before and just go through things again. But when we're on the road, pretty much the routine is we don't go to the stadium before we fly in, usually leave out on the charter middays on Fridays, and then the team has a schedule that gets them through the evening hours up until whatever they determine to be the curfew and bedtime. So we're pretty much prepping for the game, for the pregame, what we're going to do, you know, in postgame, depending on what happens, those kind of things, because in addition to doing the engineering, I also anchor the pregame show, so we have to run through those things. We actually, when I say scripted out, don't mean to say that, you know, every word is scripted, but we have a very specific outline of what we're going to do and when we're going to do it in the pregame, and the topics that we're going to touch on, the sound bites that we're going to use. And it's not just fly by the seat of your pants. It's all scripted out in an outline form. And so we kind of go through that and get ready the night before for that. And then on game day, I like to arrive at least 4 to 6 hours before kickoff to start doing the setup, depending on the venue. Some venues are more challenging than others, and we can talk about that in just a bit. But I first arrive there, and I'll tell you this, Jeff Charles, he's unlike any other play-by-play guy in a lot of ways. He's one of the best, but he jumps right in there and helps me carry the equipment around and get it up and get it in place. And then, you know, they all still, the whole crew, Jeff, Marty Fuhrer, Kevin Monroe, they all want to help and do whatever they can. But once I get in there, they ask me, what else can I do? And I say, just get out of my way. because I have a routine, and, you know, I have to start running a lot of a lot of cables. We have a lot of wireless equipment to deal with having Marty on the sideline for him to be able to hear us and us to hear him. Sometimes I have to run feeds back to the TV booth. Sometimes they like to have the both the home and the visiting team audio in case they want to use it for some reason. Then I'm getting a feed from them. If you see the TV parabolic mic microphones on the sideline, you see these guys down there holding a big dish-looking thing. That's picking up the sound from the line of scrimmage, and you hear the pop of the pads and the call of the quarterback sometimes. And that's where I'm getting that, is from the TV. So I have to sometimes drop a cable from wherever the TV booth is to get that. The TV folks, they're always really nice, usually. Every once in a while, you run to someone who really doesn't want to be helpful, but 90% of the time, they're really helpful in doing that. And then once I get everything hooked up, it takes a few hours to just get everything set up. I mean, we're running a big mixer that has all the inputs coming in, and I've got stuff going out, and I check everything, and if all is good, then we hook up, and I have a redundant system that sends the audio back to the studio in Winston-Salem, and then Winston-Salem connects to the uplink satellite, and that's how it gets out to the radio station. So I alluded earlier, you have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C, because really the broadcast not getting on the air is not an option. And so, you know, we talked about working with Woody. Working with anyone, when you're responsible for getting the broadcast on the air and making it sound good, it is a pretty awesome responsibility, and it all falls on me. It doesn't matter how great we prepare and what we talk about and how we describe the game. If it doesn't get on the air, none of that matters. So it's a lot of pressure, and sometimes we have some difficulties we have to run through, and I've got some stories of some of that I can talk about, but that's generally the routine. And then on the road games, sometimes if people are listening and they feel like we're moving through the post game pretty quick, we're having to, what took me 3 hours to set up, I have to break down in about 20 minutes because the buses are waiting to head back to the airport. By the time we finish our post game, the coaches have done all their post game comments and the players and all that, and they're ready to go. So we have to be ready to go. And so it is a scramble to get everything packed up and pulled in, and all the guys help doing that too. And we get back on the plane, we're back home, and that's pretty much a day for a road game, about a day and a half actually.
And obviously, and one of the things I've noticed many times is, not many times, but when I say many times over the years, is you also have to deal with weather. Obviously, you're not going to be on a plane if the weather is bad.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We've been flying a big plane in and out of the Pitt-Greenville Airport. Conditions have to be perfect. We've had to be diverted sometimes. You know, one story is Hurricane Matthew. We were flying back from Tampa.
Yep.
And we were coming back and probably flying. We flew around the hurricane, and we couldn't land in Greenville, so they had to divert us to Richmond. We landed in Richmond, and if we had been about an hour later, we wouldn't have been able to land in Richmond because it got really bad there. And so they deployed buses to Richmond, and we got on the buses and coming down I-95, and it was flooded. We couldn't get through, so we ended up having to stay right near Roanoke Rapids. They had to get a couple of different hotels to accommodate everybody. And then the next morning, we got up and we were able to navigate around in the daylight. Conditions were pretty much still the same as far as the flooding, but the difference was it was daylight. We had to go around some back roads to get through Wilson and things like that. So there have been a few challenges in air travel, and then the weather also has created challenges in broadcasting the game, too.
Yeah, where you're trying to get the signal, right, is not the way you wanted it. It could be a lot better, and people don't realize that sometimes no matter what you do, it's still not going to be perfect, right? I mean, you would do a great job.
Right.
I'll put your work up against anyone's. And if you can't get it to, I was telling you this last night when I was prepping for thinking about everything I've known about you. I wish I had the technical mind of David Horn to go along with my broadcasting career. And I feel like that's the one area where I'm constantly trying to improve on.
Well, it comes down to a mindset. Having the technical ability is important, but the way I approach it is you never assume anything. When I first started, I came back and started doing the pirate network engineering back in 2006. They weren't used to getting to the game sites when we were on the road that early. So why do you need to get there early? And I even remember Tom McClellan, who's the sports information director for East Carolina, saying, why do you need to get there so early? I said, it only takes you 2 or 3 hours to set up. I said, well, you know, why do you need all that time? I said, I hope I never need all that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never want to assume anything. But there have been a few times where I did, where we had challenges. I remember the last game in Houston before Houston demolished their old stadium and built a new one. I think the old stadium is Robertson Stadium.
Yeah.
The visiting radio booth was on whatever level it was on, second or third level. But the problem was the roof line of the level below went out so far you couldn't see the field. You could see the far half of the field if you stood on your tiptoes because the line of the roof below was blocking. So I got there and Jeff said, well, I can make it work. I said, well, why don't we do it on the roof? So I went and talked to the SID, and, you know, some radio crews did choose to do that just because of that roof line problem. So I have to tear everything apart. I've got racks of equipment, and because there's a little, like, 24 by 24 door that goes out up on a little scuttle hole onto the roof. And they had a 10 by 10 canopy tent up there. Assemble everything back together, get everything connected up. And we're going on the air, and the biggest, this was before there was so much concern about lightning at sporting events.
So
the game went on. We had the biggest, most massive thunderstorm as we were going on the air. I brought out, and always not assuming anything, preparing for everything, I had tarps with me, and I was covering up equipment. Some of my antennas were blowing over, microphones were getting wet, but we managed to stay on the air, and nobody ever knew really the difference other than the fact that we were referencing and you can actually hear the storm going on. So there's a little luck involved in that too. So it's preparation, not assuming anything, and a lot of luck sometimes. But that was, I'll never forget that, and I never want to go through that again, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you're making me nervous. I'm thinking about right now in my mind when, doing mobile DJ work, there's been times when they were like, yeah, we're going to do an outdoor wedding or we're going to do this. And there was one time there was a really bad thunderstorm. It was a summer thing right near a pool I had to do in the backyard of wedding receptions in the backyard of the folks' house, I guess the parents' house or whatever. And I remember outside of Greenville, and I had to literally put a tarp over the mixer and everything, and I was having to seg the songs by lifting up the tarp and trying to seg the songs.
Same
time, because it was that brings back memories.
The show, you know, the show must go on, and when it's a success is when the show goes on and the listeners don't really are not really impacted by the challenges that you're facing, and they don't know that it's going on, that it's happening. And that's when it's a success. Now, these days, in that game I described, that broadcast, we would probably be forced to shut down and get off the roof and evacuate because it was a very bad storm, because that type of weather is treated a bit more cautiously now than it was then. And it wasn't that long ago. That was probably, I don't know, 7 years ago or something. I don't remember exactly when, but yeah, I mean, like I say, it's preparing for the unknowns, and based on experience, you know what feasibly could happen, and just being ready for anything, having a backup plan and a backup plan for your backup plan. And that's what keeps the show on the air.
Do you, as far as, is it tough when you, to get back in the swing of things when you have, but we're in the off season now, but when you have in the fall time, when you have that very first game, is it like anything else where you, do you spend more time that very first game, or I know you have a routine and you've been doing it for a number of years. Is it anything different for the opening game?
No. Yeah. You know, no matter how long you've been doing it, you know, I pull all the equipment out way, you know, several weeks before and kind of do a run through to make sure that, you know, nothing is, even though everything was working when I packed it away, you know, again, you don't want to assume that everything is going to be fine because it's been stored away. This year will be even more important because where I normally store the equipment was up in the old press box, which is no longer there. So it's somewhere else unknown to me at this point. So I will have to give it a very good checkup when I pull out everything for this coming season. But yeah, for me personally, as far as the technical part of it, I set everything up way ahead and check everything out. I don't wait till the week of the game. So for my preparation, and you know, after when you get in the routine, you get that first game of the season out, you're back in the groove again. So there is that factor. It doesn't matter how long you've done it. When you have a hiatus like we have between seasons, you know, you get back in that groove, and it takes you a little bit once you get rolling into that first pregame, then it quickly comes back to you. But yeah, you know, there's you know, I still get a little more nervous than I normally would be in a regular game doing that first one, because I want to make sure we start the season off strong and the broadcast sounds good and that everything works the way it's supposed to. So there's something to be said for that, for sure.
You know, when you were talking about the press box, as Terry Holland affectionately called it, the double wide in the sky, press box of 40, I couldn't believe it, 40 years. But anyway,
right.
Are you going to miss the press box? Do you have any press box memories? Since I'm glad you mentioned that, because I thought about that and I already failed to ask you that, but I want to ask you about the press box. What are your memories of that?
Well, East Carolina needed a new press box. The accommodating TV was a little bit of a challenge. The visiting radio booth was atrocious.
Yes.
To be honest with you, our booth was one of the better ones in the conference as far as accommodating the broadcast and the room and the perspective and all that. So I never had an issue with our booth. I actually loved it. But overall, and one of the things that those of us who do this do is a courtesy to the visiting engineers. It's so helpful when we go somewhere, when the engineer for the home network is there as a resource, show us where this is, that is, or if we need that, and whatnot. And so I would try to be as accommodating as possible. And some of the feeds I would get from TV, you know, make sure that they were available to visiting radio so they didn't have to worry about that. And then the same thing would happen to us when we would go on the road. But some of the visiting teams, particularly ones who were not used to accommodations like that, and such as when we would play Virginia Tech and some of the other schools that are in the conferences that they are. I won't get into that because it might get people upset, but, you know, we're talking about the ACC. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but obviously the truth is they are not used to the facilities were there in the press box. And so Virginia Tech would usually do their broadcast from the roof. At one point, if there's always a visiting athletic director's box. And if their AD wasn't coming, Virginia Tech would do theirs from the visiting AD booth, which was better than our booth. And they would have to move everything over there, you know, the phone lines and all the facilities and things like that. But the visiting radio booth in the old press box here, it was about 5 feet wide, and 2 feet of that was taken up by a big steel beam. And so you could only get your play-by-play guy and your color commentator on the front row desk up there. And if they had a spotter or a statistician, he would have to kind of stand up behind them against the counter where the engineer setup is. So it was very tough for visiting teams, and TV had to do some things differently. They have to run, you know, a lot of the newer stadiums now, they already have infrastructure in place where there are big junction boxes down below where the truck hooks up, and then they hook everything up somewhere in the press box, and they're not running cables all over the place, and it makes it easier for TV as well. And they also have facilities down on the field for them to run a lot of their audio from the field level up. And so it'll be a big step up, and it's something that needed to happen. I know, you know, those that have tried to be negative about, you know, we need to get the program performing better before we spend all this money. But the press box facility needed to be upgraded. That was long overdue. It will make a huge difference for a lot of reasons. It's not just a comfort level or convenience level. It was a necessity because it really impeded the ability for some crews to be able to come in and set up the way they need to.
Well, like I mentioned a few episodes ago, is that the bottom line is it was something that you can't do anything about the past, but going forward, when you have a situation when you can renovate or we can do things incrementally, I feel like with the project we're doing now with the Southside project, I'm very excited about it. And one of the reasons I'm excited about it is the fact that just what you said, we're going to have state-of-the-art stuff. It's not going to be, no offense, I love the 70s. I was born in the 70s, so, but it was 1978. And so it was state-of-the-art in 1978, and here we are in 2018. And if we had done things all along, maybe we wouldn't have that. And now it's a signal for a new era. And as much as I want things to stay the same, they don't. And you have to evolve. If you don't, you kind of die. In the particular case of the press box, it's more than just luxury boxes and things like that. You guys make it sound seamless, but when you have television, for example, we were talking about earlier in the podcast about things being on radio so much back then. Look how many games, David, now are on television. In addition to the radio, you've got to worry about the television folks too, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we don't, doing our broadcast, we're not, you know, going on promoting, well, you can watch it on ESPN2 or you or whatever, because we want people to listen on the radio. But the fact is, yeah, TV is a bigger player these days. And the money from that is what makes the merry-go-round, so to speak. So, you know, it is what it is. Radio, again, when you've got great broadcasters like Jeff Charles, the legendary voices like that still doing the games, I think people still want to listen through the radio to a large degree. And so I think we're still very viable in what we do, and I think it will continue to be that way. But the fact is, you got to be able to accommodate everybody with the facilities and technology that is available today in the way we're broadcasting. I mean, we're increasingly just about everybody is using audio over the internet, voice over IP, as it's called, internet protocol, and the facilities for broadband connectivity. We had that there. It was a bit of a challenge for some of the visiting teams to get their equipment to connect up right sometimes, but that's where, again, as the home engineer, I would help them work through that ahead of time, and everybody, it always worked out right. But just the little things like that, it will be much better for radio, for TV, for all the media overall, being able to cover the games. And when you have teams that come in visiting, they leave saying how great of a facility it was. And I don't think you have particularly the radio crews coming in, leaving, saying, wow, that was one of the better facilities that we worked in. I can guarantee you they didn't, as a matter of fact. And I don't think anybody anywhere would argue that, even with the athletic folks. I mean, that's why it was is desperately needed. And a benefit of that is it will give a chance to, yes, increase the sponsorship and the donor money coming in by increasing opportunities for the high-level boxes and that kind of thing. So I think it'll be a good thing overall in a lot of ways. Now, I will tell you, I'm not really sure what we're going to be, what kind of facilities we're going to have for this upcoming season for the media, because the new press box will not be completed by this coming season, as it was extended out a ways. And so it'll be interesting, as you talked earlier about what we do differently to, at the beginning to prepare. That's a moving target right now for me. I have no idea what our broadcast booth or area will be at all at this point. I have no idea.
I was going to say, it's going to remind me of, speaking of tough places, we had a situation at one of the, when I was doing some high school games, and I've done some that have been challenging. I haven't done many games, but over the years, it's probably a few seasons worth. But anyway, there was one time where things were so bad that the play-by-play guy says to me, we both work together off the air, on the air, and then breaking everything down. He looks at me, he says, man, tell you exactly what we're going to do. I said, what? I was a little nervous. I said, what are we going to do? He says, we're going to broadcast the game in the stands. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah.
And we did. And the funny thing was is that we had fans that are, you know, even though we were doing the home team broadcast, as far as we were doing pretty much like a game of the week scenario where you pick the best matchups. And the funny thing was that we had fans that are coming up to us, and I remember this one dude that was like really up. He was up in near my face, and I'm going, I'm trying to concentrate being the color analyst, and I already have a tough time concentrating to begin with. That's a whole nother show. And then I'm trying to pay attention. I couldn't, sometimes the crowd noise was so loud, I couldn't hear what he was saying. And so I just prayed. I don't really know. I'm glad I don't have a tape of that broadcast. It was probably awful on my side of things, not his, but I was just wondering, I had that picture, that memory coming back to me. Are you guys going to have to sit in the stands with us, the commoners?
I anything is possible. It might be a 10 by 10 canopy tent at the top of the stands or something else. I don't know. I mean, we have done that. Believe it or not, the Beef O'Brady Bowl at Tropicana Field back in 2013.
Yeah.
We were actually on the concourse in the corner of the end zone, which would have been behind home plate if it was set up in a baseball configuration, which would have been great, but this is a football game. Right. So we're under a tent on the concourse looking into the corner of the end zone doing the ball game under a tent there, even though it was an enclosed dome. So, people walking by. My only power source was one outlet that also the snow cone kiosk used, and I actually got a heads up, again going back to all of us who do this looking out for one another, giving us a heads up of things, hey, you need to be aware of this. He said that power will go off, and so I had to take a UPS, uninterruptible power source, what you plug your computer into, so if the power goes out your computer doesn't go out. And the power went out a couple times. And so everything kept running because it was running off battery until I could get them to flip the breaker back on for that outlet. So, I mean, again, doing those high school games, I did my share of those when I started out the little hometown radio station, too. And if you make it through some of those, you can make it through some of the stuff we encounter still today, too. Because you never, like I say, you have to be flexible. You have to be agile. You can't go in expecting, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. And then when it's not, you don't know what to do. You have to kind of have the contingencies already in your mind and be prepared to execute them if you encounter them. You will definitely encounter them.
Yeah, I was just thinking about another story about how I do fill-in work now for the games and for high school games on the station I'm on now. And it's funny because we were at a ball game, and I won't say which one, so I didn't have that pre-approved by the owner. But we were at a game, and literally the folks that were, you know, were at that home stadium of the folks, and not of the team we covered, but all of a sudden the folks turn up the pre-game music that they wanted the high school team to warm up to so loud that I'm sure it was on the broadcast, or it's, or we were doing a pre-game show, and so I'll never forget that as well. What do you think going forward? I know you don't know a lot. Do you know about the one question I had about the press box? Do you, have you seen or do you know what it's going to be like once the Southside project is finished?
I've seen some of the sketches of it, but the details of what the booth will look like, I don't know. One of the things that we've encouraged the powers that be to do is to consult with IMG on the design of the booth, as far as where all of the, I mean, as little of a detail as where the feed for the ref mic and the phone lines and the Ethernet jacks are. I mean, we've been in booths where schools have spent a lot of money renovating and building a new stadium or a new press facilities, and you have the radio, where the radio equipment sets up and where all the talent is, your play-by-play guy and your color guy and all that. And then everything else that you need to connect to is on the other side of the room. I mean, it's little things like that. And just designing the workspace to be to make sense as far as how things work and how things flow. And so I'm sure they will do that, and that we will have a very nice facility and a good place to work, and a very easy place to work. When you have a radio broadcast booth that's designed right, you know, I talked about my setup routine. I can come in and within 2 hours have everything set up and checked out, and then I'm sitting there, you know, waiting for things to happen, and we're running through our pregame show or just going down and visiting with folks. And it goes back to the whole thing that I mentioned, you know, why do you need 4 or 6 hours to set up? Well, I hope I never do.
Right.
And when you have a good facility, I can do it in 2 hours or less, and we're good to go. And we're just sitting, waiting, talking, chatting, kind of relaxing a little bit before we go on. But sometimes we're running right down to the wire when we have some challenges thrown out there. So we'll see. But I know it'll be a very nice facility, and that they'll take into account the feedback from TV and radio on how to design these booths, where they're very accommodating to everybody.
I was going to ask you, as somebody that I know I'm not, I probably shouldn't, but are there ways that you can simplify your job? In other words, are there things that you could keep set up, or do you have to have everything out of that room?
No. For the home games, if we have back-to-back home games, I actually love that, because I leave most everything set up.
Oh, okay.
Because we can lock it up. Now, that's the other factor. I'm going to take a wild guess that whatever temporary setup we have this year, that I'm probably not going to be able to do that.
Right.
I'm just going to take a wild guess, so I'm fully prepared for that. But that's a nice benefit when we have, and I think, if I remember right, if the schedule hadn't got changed around because of having to reschedule things because of Hurricane Matthew, I think last year we would have had 3 back-to-back home games, and we end up changing schedule. I don't know, but anyway, that is a benefit. When you have a good booth and it can be locked up and secured, you know, I just leave everything set up if we're going to have another home game the next week.
Well, I can tell you, David, that this year for the schedule, you have North Carolina A&T September 1st is the opening game, and you have September 8th, your alma mater, UNC, back-to-back. So you definitely, I know off the top of my head, you've got the first 2 games out of the gate will be back-to-back home games.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I remember that now. So hopefully I can it'll be a situation to where we can leave things up there, but it's not a huge deal. But the main thing is that just hope it's a situation to where if we have bad weather that I'm not having to scramble to keep us on the air because things are getting wet. I mean, I know we had a game several years ago when Virginia Tech was here, and the rain was sideways for like half the game.
Yeah, was that that was 2015. I remember
yes.
that very well.
Yeah. And the booth there, the windows leaked a little bit, and if the rain would blow toward the press box, you would get water start coming in. There were some roof leaking problems. I had to put a trash can under, catch some water to keep Kevin Monroe from getting wet. So those things happen. And actually, we lost Marty Fuhrer's wireless mic. It made it to the end of the game, but it got waterlogged. And so, you know, those things happen. I have a backup if that ever happens again. But we made it through that one. I know down at the last time we played Southern Miss, their stadium, it's old. And it started raining, and the roof started leaking right on top of my equipment. So I had to hold a trash can up there through most of the game.
Oh, man.
So, you know, people don't realize these things go on, but they do.
I was going to ask you, I've been meaning to the whole broadcast here, the whole podcast. Well, the time we have remaining, 5 minutes or so, I wanted to, can you give us folks your take on the different cast of characters? I mean, you guys sound like you really like each other, but starting with the voice of the Pirates, I think it's going to be 31 years coming up, the 31st season for the voice, right?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like yesterday when I first came to Greenville, he had only been here 2 or 3 years. And now, you know, he's been here 31 years. Jeff Charles is one of the finest. You know, we can talk about what a great broadcaster he is, a great play-by-play guy. He definitely is. There's no question he's one of the best there. But he is one of the best people. And I think most people know, you know, his story of battling cancer and beating that. You know, and when you go through that, I mean, he just amazed me. I remember having to go through that football season. You know, we had him for a couple of games, and then what happened to him happened. And then we had to make it through the rest of the season. We had Tony Castricone come in and fill in, did a great job. Now he's out in Washington as a play-by-play guy. But he's just a great person. He and his wife and his family. I know his brother. He's got two brothers. I know his other brother more than the other one because we both worked with him up in Raleigh.
Yep.
And I both. They're just great people, and he is one of the kindest, most considerate people. And I told you earlier in our podcast discussion here. I mean, talk about Southern Miss. Here's an example of Jeff Charles, the kind of person. When we would go to Southern Miss, the hotel we stayed at was about a mile from the stadium. And usually in the mornings on game days, if we're not doing like a noon game or something that's really, really early, he'll go out and take a run. And he would go run down to the stadium. Our equipment travels on the football equipment truck and is stowed away in the locker room. And then when we arrive at game site, we go to the locker room, get it, roll it up to the press box. He would go down, run to the stadium as part of his morning run, get the big case, roll it up to the press box, and then run back to the hotel. I mean, he's just one of those rare people who he doesn't have the ego, but he has the talent. And sometimes you have someone who's really talented and really good, and they kind of have an ego to go along with it, and he does not have that, and that's very rare. And so it's an honor to work with him every single game.
What about Kevin Monroe?
Kevin is he's sharp as a tack, and his preparation he has all of the details down. He has studied the game to where he can really offer insight and not just echo something that Jeff says. He really adds depth to the broadcast because he knows what he's talking about. He's an extremely brilliant person. And he is a great guy. He's my room. We room together when we're on the road game. So I've gotten to know him really, really well. He has a great family as well. And he works for an investment financial advising firm in Raleigh that focuses primarily on professional athletes. and helping them manage their money. And so that's his day job. And it's just a joy to work with him, and it's been a pleasure to get to know him over the last 12 years or so. And Marty's the other one.
Yeah.
Marty's been alongside Jeff longer than any of the rest of us. And Marty's a good guy, too. It's just they're all great guys. I've worked in the business long enough where, you know, I've been around people that have been, you know, good, great broadcasters, but, you know, just getting to know them as people was a little bit harder. And that's not the case with this group. We've been together a long time. It's like Jeff alludes to, sometimes we get on we'll get on our preseason conference call to kind of run through everything with the IMG folks and say, well, is there anything we need to talk about, work on? And Jeff's response is, well, we've all been doing this together so long, it's like we all fit together like a glove. And just kind of, well, to say it just kind of happens is maybe an understatement, but it kind of does. It's really easy for all of us to work together. We know how each other think. I know what each of them need. I know what they want. They know what I need to be able to do what I need to do to make the broadcast sound good. And it's just a chemistry that's very rare in a broadcast crew like that. And I think it's kind of a gift. And I'm just thankful that I have an opportunity to work with all of them.
Well, David, I appreciate it. I know that your time, you've been generous with your time, and I know you've got to get to your day job, so to speak. I appreciate you so much. I tell you what, it's an honor to have you on, and I hope you'll come back on from time to time, especially maybe we can get you back on before the season starts, and you can update us on how things are going with the press box or the temporary press box this year, and then it'll be great to have you on in 2019 to find out more about the press box for the Southside, new Southside project.
Yeah, I hope by maybe July we'll know what we're going to be dealing with. I'm pretty sure we will. So it might be an interesting discussion to have then. I'd be more than happy to come back on anytime.
All right, appreciate you very much, and we look forward to having you on again. And by the way, folks, make sure that you turn down the sound if you're watching the game and listen to David and Jeff and Kevin and Marty. They do an excellent job for the Pirates, and really add a lot to the listening experience and experience of the game. And David, you're a gem. You're a great guy, and I appreciate your friendship and appreciate you being on today.
Oh, absolutely. And then one final shout out of a person that's involved with us it's in the background is the general manager for IMG down here in Greenville for the East Carolina operation is Megan Hinchin. And she's one of the best too. She's one of the best general managers that I've ever done work for. So a shout out to her. She makes a lot of things happen, makes a lot of things that would be more difficult for us easy. So like I say, it's a great group. An honor to be on your podcast. It's a great endeavor you've got going, and I wish you much success with it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and appreciate you, and we'll definitely see you next time.
You betcha. Thank you, Dave.
What a great interview. I want to thank David Horn, again, the engineer and producer for the Pirate IMG Sports Network. With Jeff Charles is great, a friend of mine. Hopefully we can have him on soon. And Kevin Monroe and Marty Fuhrer are also great, and they do a great job. And, of course, Cy Seymour is great on the basketball end of things. What a great week to have Joe Dooley back as the basketball coach. We're excited about him. We'll try to have him on as well. The baseball team is number 8 in the country, we just found out. So congratulations to, according to Baseball America, number 8 in the country for the top 25 baseball teams. That's very exciting. Speaking of exciting, thank you so much for all the great, we've got a lot of people listening right now for the very first month. I'm very shocked, excited. We got a lot of great guests coming up. I appreciate them coming on in the future. We're working on schedules right now. Like us on Facebook, The Sports Objective. You could also follow us on Twitter. It's at The Sports OBJ, and the OBJ is actually capitalized. And we've got so many things. We're working on our website right now and a lot of other cool stuff. We got some big stuff we're planning right now, I promise you. So make sure you go to like us on Facebook and the Twitter, and keep up with us. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.